Yes.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. Elizabeth Dooley on behalf of Petitioner Rene Garcia-Gonzalez.
Are you doing this case pro bono?
I am, Your Honor.
Thank you for doing it.
Of course. Your Honor, I'd like to reserve 2 minutes of my time for rebuttal, but I will, of course, watch my clock. And, Your Honor, this petition should be granted for three reasons. As an initial matter, the BIA accepted as true the facts in Mr. Garcia's declaration. And those facts, in combination with the unrebutted country conditions evidence, compels the conclusion that it is more likely than not that Mr. Garcia will be tortured if he is returned to Mexico. Second, the BIA failed to consider particularly probative evidence in the record, including statements in Mr. Garcia's declaration, as well as portions of the State Department report. Finally, the BIA failed to consider the threat of harm to Mr. Garcia in the aggregate, instead analyzing each of the three sources of potential torture in isolation. Your Honors, I'd like to begin with the threat of harm to Mr. Garcia that he faces at the hands of police officers if he's returned to the streets in Mexico. So previously, he was beaten on at least two occasions severely to the point where he has permanent back pain as a result. And the BIA, in analyzing this source of torture, failed to consider that Mr. Garcia was beaten during questioning. As this court has...
Failed to consider what? I'm sorry.
The BIA failed to consider that Mr. Garcia was beaten during questionings and not just during arrest. And so when the BIA says in its decision that some of the harm Mr. Garcia may have suffered was incident to lawful arrest, what it didn't consider in this case was that if he was beaten during questioning, that...
I don't understand what difference that makes anyway. I mean, even if he's beaten pursuant to a legitimate arrest, he was still beaten. The question is, was he beaten enough to be torture, right?
I agree, Your Honor. Yes. But what I do think that the BIA's statement demonstrates...
They weren't suggesting that the beating was the punishment for the legitimate arrest.
Correct. Correct. I do think that the BIA's statement in just mentioning lawful arrest, though, demonstrates that they did actually fail to consider that he was also beaten while in jail and during questionings. And
I thought what they really said meant was it just wasn't that serious.
I'm not in their heads, so I can't...
Or maybe it's what the IJ said. Go ahead.
Fair enough. And so the fact that he was beaten previously, in combination with the State Department report, which puts forth evidence of frequent incidents of individuals who are taken into custody and are not just beaten, as the BIA didn't feel as though that rose to the level of torture here, but are actually tortured, unequivocally tortured, with electric shocks and other terrible types of things that are laid out.
Can I ask you, on this line of your argument, is it your position that if any person from Mexico can show that it's more likely than not that they will be taken into police custody, that they're entitled to cat relief, given what's stated in the State Department reports? Because it seems to me that's the logical implication of accepting your argument here.
So I do think that in this case, there's a tremendous amount of evidence that Mr. Garcia was also beaten several times previously. So it's not simply that because the short answer is no. I don't think that that's the ultimate outcome of my argument. I would say that in this particular case, because Mr. Garcia was severely beaten on two prior occasions, and in combination with the fact that this evidence does exist in the State Department reports, that all of those factors combine.
But ultimately, I mean, your argument overall is that you can't take these things in pieces.
Right.
That Mr. Garcia, given his situation, i.e. he's either going to be homeless or in a mental institution or a prison, pretty much those are the three options as to where he's going to be.
Right.
So one, therefore, can add them all up as to the 50% rather than, so he's not in the situation of just anybody who is for purposes of CAT, he isn't in the same situation as anybody in Mexico because of the accumulation, essentially.
That's exactly right, Your Honor.
So I think you're biting off more than you have to chew, to say, to focus on this discreetly.
Thank you, Your Honor.
I understand that's the nature of your argument, but it seems to me there's just two components to it. It's one, how likely is it that he's going to wind up in this versus that situation, right? Mm-hmm. And I think you've basically established 100% likelihood that he's either going to wind up eventually in police custody or in one of these state-run mental institutions. Then the question simply becomes, how likely is it that anyone who's placed in that situation is going to be subjected to torture? So I mean, it seems to me you're back in the same place of saying, well, the evidence either supports that pretty much everybody who is either placed in police custody or placed in a state-run mental institution is more likely than not to be subject to torture.
So to Judge Berzon's point, I am not trying to make that argument and go quite that far. I think that when one is looking at the specific facts of this case, and you look at what has happened to Mr. Garcia in the past, both in police custody, himself individually, in police custody, as well as in the mental institution, and you consider that past evidence in combination with the State Department reports, I think that all of those factors together compel the conclusion that it's more likely than not.
Okay, let's just say hypothetically that your evidence establishes only that there's a 30% chance that somebody taken into police custody will be tortured, and there's only a 30% chance that someone who's placed in a state-run mental institution will be subjected to torture. I don't think you get to add those together and say, therefore, right, because you're either going to wind up in one, wind up in the other, but if in either scenario, it's still, there's less than a 50% likelihood that your client will be subjected to torture. I don't see how that establishes entitlement to CAT relief.
I think actually under that hypothetical, I think you're right about that piece, which is that if there's a 50% likelihood that Mr. Garcia is going to wind up in a mental institution and a 50% likelihood that he will end up in police custody, and in either of those situations, the BIA had determined that there was only a 30% likelihood that he would be tortured in police custody or tortured in a mental institution, then at the end of the day, he would not.
Interesting math, but except for the fact that, as I understand it, it isn't either or. It's sort of sequential over time. I mean, it's
correct.
It's unlikely that he's going to be.
Yes.
If there was one place he was most likely to be continually, it would probably be the mental institution. But at least in the past, he's been in one, and then he's been in the other, and then he's been in the other. I don't know how that affects the math, but
correct. So if as under the facts of this case, he does move from one place to the other, then you could add those pieces together. But under just your very specific scenario, if he is actually just stuck forever in one or the other, the math wouldn't work, and he wouldn't be more likely than not to be tortured.
Which case from this court do you think most closely aligns with the facts of your case?
I think on the torture piece, I think Vinh Tan Nguyen, which was a 2013 decision. I think in terms of the BIA's failure to consider particularly probative evidence in the record or failure to consider.
Where do you get that from? I mean, because they didn't mention it?
They didn't mention it, and
well, what specifically did they not mention?
So they failed to mention that he was beaten during questionings. They also failed to mention that that there were altercations between patients in a mental institution, and that when police were called, they simply didn't respond. And so that gets to the intent.
Well, I mean, doesn't that run into the, was it Villagros? Is that the name of the case?
Villegas. Yeah. It does, but the point in Villegas, in my understanding, is that intent was required. And so although the mental institutions in Mexico had these squalid conditions, because the government did not intend to torture individuals in those institutions, it didn't rise to the level of torture. But in Villegas, the court was careful to leave in place the fact that, and I think this is from Zhang, that where a private individual evinces a intent to torture. All that is necessary from the government is acquiescence to that private intent.
Well, but it's the definition of torture. I mean, my understanding is that the premise of Villegas was that torture doesn't just mean doing bad things to people. It means doing bad things to punish them or elicit testimony. I guess because that's what the statute says. So, therefore, even if it's done by a private person, doesn't it have to meet that standard?
Your Honor, I see that I'm out
or,
of...
Meet the standard with regard to why the government is acquiescing. I mean, if, for example, the reason why the government wasn't coming to deal with the altercations between the people in the mental institution was because they wanted to punish these people, I suppose that would count, but...
So my understanding is that it needs to be intent on the part of the private individual, and for the government, it needs to be willful blindness or acquiescence. And I see that I'm out of time. Thank you.
May it please the Court, I'm Jonathan Robbins here on behalf of the Attorney General. Good morning to everyone. The key issue in this case is whether the record compels reversal of the Board's denial of petitioner's application for protection under the regulations implementing the Convention Against Torture. And petitioner is basing his claim on a fear of torture from a number of different sources, four specifically. He's claiming that he fears torture from the Arellano Felix drug cartel. He's claiming to fear torture from unidentified kidnappers. He's claiming torture emanating from the situation involving the mental institutions in Mexico, and he's claiming torture from the Mexican police.
Maybe start with the police.
Okay. Well, with respect to the police, actually, in proceedings below, when petitioner had two claims pending, he had a CAT claim, which is the only claim here, but he also had a withholding of removal claim. So he was presenting evidence of persecution and torture, and he had sort of mashed everything together and sort of put forth a lot of evidence of harm and sort of vaguely had determined that this was evidence of persecution and torture. But when the immigration judge asked for clarification from his attorney below and said, he said, these beatings from the police seems more like persecution, but it doesn't seem like it rises to the level of torture. Would it be a fair assessment of your claim to say that you're basing the torture claim on the mental institution things and not the police? And petitioner's counsel said yes. So now
petitioner... not fatal to the claim. But I mean, I remember seeing that. Fine. Okay, I'll grant you that.
So,
but we have State Department reports that suggest that actually torture is quite prevalent when people are taken into police custody.
It's true. That is true that there are incidents. But as Your Honor noted, if the State Department's reports alone were enough, then anybody who's going to be arrested by police could make a convention against torture.
But it's not enough because he did, in fact, encounter... because he did encounter himself some of this treatment, whether it arose to torture or not, and during questioning, he did say that. Mm-hmm. So he's not just anyone who's likely to be in custody, and because, as we were saying before, if he's not in custody, he's going to be in one of these other situations where he also has some evidence that he himself has been at least subject to very, very poor treatment.
Well, certainly, well, it depends on which portion you're talking about, because some of the instances where he claims that he suffered harm suffer from...
First of all, stop the claims, because, in fact, we are in a situation where we're taking what he said is true. Is that right?
Yes.
All right,
yes.
So
I don't mean
to
suggest otherwise.
Claims suggest that it hasn't been established. It's been established for all purposes.
I wasn't trying to suggest that, Your
okay.
Honor.
You did suggest in your brief at great length, which is why I called you on it.
No, our brief argues only that we take everything as true. We did not argue anything else in our brief. We certainly, in the description of what happened below, talked about the immigration judge's problems with below, but we're not arguing that it's not credibility. We take this as true. I hope we've been clear on that. But with respect to For example, the harm that he faced with respect to the Ariel and Felix drug cartel and the problems that his family encountered. The claim suffers from a problem of demonstrating the requisite state action. He has to show that the Mexican government would consent or acquiesce to the torture, or that a public official would do the same. And the evidence actually rebuts that, because the evidence shows that the Mexican government has really gone after the Ariel and Felix drug cartel and doesn't acquiesce or consent to their activities. So in terms of the aggregate...
Well, his answer to that, as I understand it, was, I didn't say it was that drug cartel.
Well, he does claim that the Arellano Felix drug cartel did...
A drug cartel.
I'm sorry, what?
I thought he said it was a drug cartel.
He says that with respect to the unidentified kidnappers, but with respect to the harm that his family encountered, he says that was the Arellano Felix drug cartel. And so in terms of the aggregate sort of harm that would add to the calculus in determining whether he has a 50% chance of torture, that doesn't add a whole lot, because that's not harm by the Mexican government. In fact, the evidence shows that it's really not acquiescence by the Mexican government. With respect to the unidentified kidnappers, the evidence as to who these people were is a bit scant. He suggests that there was possibly a drug cartel. I'm sorry, what?
I don't believe she's relying on that very much.
Okay. Well, with respect to the mental institution, let's get into that. I mean, I think we're pretty squarely in the realm of Villegas against Mukasey and Garcia Emiliano against Holder.
In fact, the police came and shot a whole bunch of people. Does that sound like Villegas?
Well, no, Your Honor, but the question, that's certainly one of the ways she attempts to distinguish the case. But here's the problem. When we're assessing a torture claim, just because something bad happened in the past doesn't create a presumption that something's going to happen in the future. Now, the evidence shows that Mexico, however ineffectually, is trying to improve the conditions for the mentally ill in these mental institutions.
Well,
admittedly,
if
they're ineffectual.
Ineffectual, then they're unable. I guess acquiescence maybe is more than that, but still, if it's not working.
Exactly, Your Honor. Inability is not sufficient to demonstrate the acquiescence or consent that is required under the regulations which define torture. While it would certainly be awful that this incident happened where some people were indiscriminately killed, the question is, how does this speak to the likelihood of future torture that petitioner would potentially face? And petitioner's counsel, government's counsel, weren't able to find any evidence that this kind of thing is going on in Mexico, where people are being indiscriminately shot in mental institutions there.
But now you're questioning his veracity again. He said it happened. He was there.
No.
We're accepting that.
I'm questioning the likelihood of this type of event happening in the future, given that the State Department... I mean, if there was a more than 50% chance that somebody was going to be indiscriminately shot at a mental institution, it would be likely that the State Department reports, the mental institution reports, the background articles would give some indication that this is a real risk. I'm not saying that it didn't happen in the past, but what we're looking for is the future likelihood here. And the evidence is just too scant to meet that 50% threshold.
What is your understanding with regard to CAT claims of the connection... I mean, for withholding or asylum... If there were past persecution, it would be you'd switch the burden at that point.
Yes, there would be a presumption created.
Gather we don't do that.
Yes.
So what do we do? With the past events, just ignore them?
Well, no. Past events are certainly an important consideration in torture. Past torture can be indicative of a likelihood of future torture, but there's no presumption created. That much is clear from the regulations. So the question is does this past harm that he faced with respect to the shooting indicate a likelihood of future torture? And given that the State Department reports don't really give any indication that this is something that happens in Mexico on a regular basis, certainly a reasonable fact finder could determine that petitioner hasn't established the 50% threshold that he needs to hit.
Can I take you back then to the police beatings? Because the State Department reports do suggest that torture happens with regularity when people are taken into police custody. And it seems to me he has shown that it's quite likely that he will eventually, at some point, if he's returned to Mexico, find himself once again in police custody. So why isn't that sufficient?
Well, that sort of brings us with it. There's a whole string of cases that we cite to in our brief where people underwent the same type of harm that petitioner went, beatings, detentions, arrests, and that have demonstrated that where the court found that that wasn't sufficient to uphold a claim for a CAT relief.
Because it's not severe enough?
Yes.
That one?
Yes.
Or because it's not for the appropriate...
In fact, there are often claims, even with a lower threshold of persecution, where detentions, arrests, and beatings don't even meet the standard for that.
He said he had permanent injury. He says it was during questioning.
He does, but the evidence that he provided, and the immigration judge board both noted this, the evidence with respect to these police beatings was a bit scant. All we really have is his declaration, and he says that he was brought before a judge.
But then you're questioning his veracity again.
I'm questioning the evidence, whether the evidence meets his burden of proof of demonstrating a 50% likelihood of threshold. I'm not questioning his credibility.
Well, you were, because you were saying that he didn't have enough detail, i.e. it doesn't seem to be true. He did say that he was beaten to the degree that he has a permanent injury, and that it was during questioning. Okay, now take that.
Well, he also says, by the way, that he was brought before a judge, and he wasn't there for a prolonged period of time. So in terms of the severity of the harm, there are other factors that he also alleged. And at the end of the day, this is sort of akin to, it seems to me to be quite akin to the string of cases that we cite to in our brief where people suffered similar types of detention. People were also questioned in other cases where they were detained by police. Often people are questioned.
He said he was beaten while he was questioned.
Yes. Okay. That's what I'm saying. In the other cases where people have been interrogated by police, that's a type of claim that we see all the time. And in those other cases.
He didn't say he was only interrogated. He said he was beaten while he was interrogated.
Yes. I'm sorry if I'm not being clear. In those other cases.
You keep leaving that out.
In other cases where people have been beaten while interrogated, the court has upheld the agency's denial of cat relief, saying that that type of harm was not severe enough to meet the threshold. Yes.
It appears that the BIA did not consider the country reports on torture by police. Do you agree with that?
No, I think the agency did consider the state.
But where does it show in the record that they did?
Just a moment.
Well, without searching for it, do you believe it shows in the record?
Certainly the immigration judge did at page 69, acknowledging that the report detailed evidence of abuses against individuals with mental health disabilities.
That's the mental health piece.
Right.
What about police beatings?
I don't know that the board specifically mentioned the State Department reports with respect to police beatings, but they obviously did consider the reports, and the case law is clear that the board does not have to explicitly mention every detail from when we have a situation where we have hundreds of pages of reports. I mean, I think it's relatively clear the agency considered the State Department reports. These are thorough decisions by the IJ and both the board. There's not a lack of consideration of evidence here.
Can I ask you a question? If we were not to be persuaded by your argument here, what would happen?
Well, the IJ's decision was based on two findings. Only one of them was upheld by the board.
Right.
The board upheld the finding that assuming everything he said was true, then we would...
Right, that's why I'm asking. So what would happen?
The immigration judge had an alternate finding. He said that even though he credited petitioner as a speculative, a subjective credibility to point, that a lot of the evidence that he had conflicted with itself, was questionable. For example, he claims his family was murdered, but at one point he claims they were murdered in 1989, and at another point he claims they were murdered in 2007. So there's evidence here that seems to suggest that there are some problems with the objective reasonableness of the claim. So if that were the case, that the board would have to have an opportunity to address that alternative finding by the immigration judge if it were remanded. Does that mean I'm out of time? I think I'm out of time.
Yes, you are out of time.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for your time, Your Honor.
Have some time to rebuttal. Give me 1 minute.
Thank you, Your Honors. Just really quickly on the Villegas point, the site for acquiescence in terms of a private individual conducting torture is at it's 523 F3rd at 989. And then in terms of the State Department country report, which Judge Fischer, you asked about, there's no indication in the record that the court considered or that the BIA considered the State Department report in the context of the police beatings. And finally, in terms of whether the course of action, Judge Watford, to your hypothetical, in terms of what would occur if this case were to be remanded, I think there are two options. In cases in which the record compels the conclusion that Mr. Garcia would be more likely than not to be tortured, there are plenty of examples of this court granting outright relief.
Well, that's why I was asking, because I don't see how we could do that, given that the way that the posture in which the case comes to us is the the agency below has just assumed without deciding that everything he has said is true. So I guess I was contemplating that if we were to reject that, the BIA's determination, that, well, then somebody would need to, I guess, figure out in fact whether all of what he has said should be credited. That's really what I was trying to inquire about. Is that your view as well?
My view is that because the BIA took as true what's in Mr. Garcia's declaration, those are the facts with which we are working.
And they did say we're taking it as true for purposes of this appeal.
That's true, Your Honor. Accepting as true for purposes of this appeal.
Therefore, there still is a hanging out credibility appeal.
In the initial piece of the IJ's decision. So if this court were to remand on that basis, I would first encourage the court to perhaps direct the BIA to considering all of the evidence in the record, continuing to assume Mr. Garcia's declaration to be true for purposes of this appeal.
Okay, thank you very
thank
much.
You very much.
Thank you both of you for your arguments. The case of Garcia-Gonzalez versus Sessions is submitted.